everyone, and welcome to the second, that's right, second, we're on a hot streak, pay-per-view round table from your friends at Inside the Rope, where we take a few days after a pay-per-view event, digest it, think about it, take in a little dessert in the form of Monday Night Raw, which contextualizes the entire meal, and then we discuss it a few days later, hopefully always on a Thursday. I'm Robert Duffin, and I'm here with my excellent panel of experts. There's no blabbery Booker T's or disinterested Jerry Lawlers here. We have David McCutcheon and Sondra.
Hey, everyone. Hello. How's it going? I will say, though, if you're going to make the food analogy, I'm going to need a lot more wine to get this meal down because, boy, oh boy, did I not like Payback.
Well, this is the interesting thing. I have been half dreading recording this because I saw, now no spoilers, we'll get to it. I did see one of your tweets, David, about Payback, and I just thought, really? Because I just think that for the first time, I think we're on very different pages, but hopefully, you know, Sondra can
step in. Looking forward to mediating this, you know, this lover's spat. I'm hoping that you two can come out of this stronger and more bonded together.
In any time the Robert and I get together, in the end, we always come out stronger.
Yeah.
Or at least calm.
Yeah, it's always very hot and torrid at the start, but we'll get there.
You're going to end up having to strip down from some of that very elegant wear that you're currently wearing on your body right now. Because you're all dressed up for this, is that right?
I am. I mean, the thing that people don't know is I always put a shirt and tie on to record Inside the Ropes. I've never recorded Inside the Ropes in my pants. I saw a rumor on, like, I don't know, Lords of Pain, being like, Dave Meltzer says that Robert Duffin sometimes records Inside the Ropes in his underwear, and like, that's not even true. I am never waiting on, including now.
That's no good, Meltzer, just burying you out of nowhere. Just
I know.
Typical.
So Sunday evening, Payback slotted in. It's usually later in the year, but they made quite a, I think now looking back on it, a really good choice to put this as the post WrestleMania show as opposed to Extreme Rules, because Extreme Rules can then, you know, further the feuds happening here with the stipulations, which I think is quite good. But Payback 2016 from one of the hottest WWE cities, Chicago, at the Allstate Arena, which has become synonymous with wild crowds and usually really good shows since 2011. And the Money in the Bank show that they had there, obviously. It seems that since then people anticipate these shows. They're going to be crazy. They're going to be wild. And on paper, it was a really strong card. I think people were very excited about it and looking forward to it. And we're gonna get into it. But there is one thing we have to start with, because I don't want to skip over this. But the pre-show, I was not able to watch because I went out with that other person that sometimes makes the effort to podcast with us. And we went to a bar to watch Payback, and they weren't showing the pre-show because, you know, there were people there that just wanted to drink and didn't care about this gay wrestling shit on TV. So I didn't get to see the pre-show, but I was flabbergasted by the Twitter response to the Ryback-Kalisto match, which everybody has said is actually really good. I didn't get a chance to see. There was also the unexpected victory for Dolph Ziggler over Baron Corbin. I think on our preview show, both me and Kenny didn't even talk about the match. We just went, Baron Corbin's winning this. This is his first big pay-per-view win. He did not. Did either of you watch it?
I did not.
I managed to catch the Kalisto Ryback match, which I thought was actually rather good. It was a good match. It would end up being Ryback's last televised WWE match, too, right?
Well, let's talk about that. We don't really talk about news so much on the round tables, but I feel it would be remiss because by next week we can forget. And it's a good thing to bring it up now. But obviously, Ryback came out in Chicago. He did the CM Punk entrance, which is, it's just funny, you know. He's been waiting.
I did see video of that. I was out getting gyros at the time of the match actually happening, so I didn't get to see it. But I thought what I saw of like the little clip thing, he looked kind of awesome. I love Ryback.
Yeah. Props to Ryback. I am also a fan of the big guy.
And he, after giving an interview not that long ago, saying he was dissatisfied by his position on the card, he it's announced that he has, well, it breaks on lighting that he's left or he's been removed from television or no more TV appearances. And then it comes out that he's in some unfortunate contract disputes where, you know, he wants to come back, but he wants to make more money. And then he puts out, on of all places, Tumblr. I don't know why that makes me laugh that Ryback has a Tumblr.
I agree.
It's just, no, it's pretty funny. It actually seems very fitting for Ryback. Like, I could, for some reason, it just seems to fit. I don't know why.
Whenever I think of Tumblr, I think of, like, two things, right? I think of inspirational quotes and pornography GIFs. Those are the only two things that I've ever seen on Tumblr, I think.
Yeah, that's all I use it for. And Ryback puts out a statement. It was very long, so I'll have to sort of put it in a nutshell. That he is unhappy because he doesn't feel like he's being booked very well or positioned very well. And as a result of that, you know, he doesn't make much money from merchandise. He also thinks that, you know, that in general, the performers don't get paid what they should and that everyone should sort of be paid the same. Although I don't think he really means like I should be paid the same as John Cena, but I think he thinks that if you're going to be treated as just like the person that loses, or you're just going to be, you know, have to put other guys over, you don't win all the time. It's not your fault. Like that's what you're being written to do. You know, an actor on a show who is like a loser character that doesn't get paid less than the guy who's the hero. You know, so I can kind of see where he's coming from. I think there's flaws and holes in the argument, but it looks like he's not going to be back on TV. And being this publicly critical of the company has never worked out well for people before. I think we're going to be saying goodbye to the Ryback at some point soon. So what do you guys think about it? I mean, I assume you've both seen at least snippets of the statement. I'm not entirely sure how I feel about it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure either yet. I think there's some validity to it. I think when he talks about, you know, we're in a predetermined sport, and why are the winners of the predetermined sport being paid so significantly higher than the losers of the predetermined sport when that's what we're being told to do, was kind of the gist of his statement. And so it wasn't necessarily about, like, I think I should be getting more money. I mean, he does, obviously. Like, he says that, but a lot of it had to do with like pay equity and whatnot, and it's an interesting argument. Like, I don't know enough about wrestling pay systems to have a super informed opinion, but it makes some level of sense that, I mean, the system of pay is based on like arena gate draws and whatnot from olden days, right? Like when drawing people to the building was a big thing. So I mean, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think it's a really interesting discussion. I did see just a bit ago that Brian Cage tweeted that I guess people have been tweeting him like, oh, maybe we'll see Ryback versus Cage or something. I don't know. But he said like the Ryback versus me tweets caused me to look into it and I agree with everything he said or something like that. I don't have the tweet in front of me. But so, you know, another big name just coming out in support of him, which I think is interesting.
I think that it has sort of like a Vince Russo appeal. Ah, bro, let me tell you something, bro. I think that 50% of what he says has some validity to it, and then the other half is just kind of nonsense, right? Yeah. Let's say Epico and Primo should not be making the same amount of money as, say, The New Day, because The New Day is selling more merchandise and everything else. And, of course, you could argue, well, The New Day, they have that place in the company. But then I would argue, okay, but The New Day were a very racist choir group because they're black. I mean, obviously, Vince saw that and they're like, oh, three black guys for personality. They're going to sing about Jesus. So automatically, that put them at a disadvantage, right? So then they went out and they got over on their own, and that's like a man-made success. So I always look to The New Day and I go, okay, you can be handed complete garbage, but you can make chicken salad out of chicken shit, right? So that's the way that I see it, is a lot of it is in the hands of the talent. We love to point and go, well, this guy didn't get over because of this, that, or the other. Like Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler, one of the best overall workers in the company. The problem is he thinks that he's Shawn Michaels. Maybe if he got rid of that and started exuding more of Dolph Ziggler, maybe he might have a better shot at being a top guy again instead of just kind of floating around. So, I mean, it's a 50-50 shot. I think that the boys should be paid a little bit more. I think that's kind of obvious. You know, if someone told me, hey, get in your car and work 350 days a year for $100,000, I go, but I'm kind of comfortable at home with my wife and my cats making half that. You know what I mean? It's one of those things to where you hear that, and it's like, I think I'm good. I think I'm good. So I think that he makes some good points, and it's certainly worthy of a discussion. But I also think that he's not coming back because Vince does not really care for that too much whenever people go out of their way to beseech him. So
I obviously would assume that this story will, you know, it has legs, it's going to carry on a little bit well longer. We'll talk more about it at a future date, no doubt. But I did think it was quite interesting because I saw someone tweet saying maybe Ryback will go to New Japan. And my sort of feeling was that could be quite good for him. And then I realized, and I never really thought about this before, and I don't know whether you guys agree, but I think that that kind of style of performer, like, WWE has never really served them very well. And as like recent examples, I think of Matt Bloom or Doc Gallows. As two guys, they're like, you know, it's not just that they're bald, but they're kind of big guys, sort of hosses, and, you know, WWE don't really know what to do with them or how to book these kind of guys, and then they end up going to Japan, and they have, you know, when Matt Bloom came back as Lord Tensai before that absolutely bombed, people were quite excited because they're like, oh, he was Albert, but he's gone over to New Japan and he's completely reinvented himself and he's great now. And the same thing with Gallows, you know, he was Festus, he wasn't really doing much with the Straight Edge Society. And then he left, and I know he had a little stint in TNA, but, you know, he pretty much became this sort of beloved part of the Bullet Club over in Japan. And I just wonder if there's just like a type of guy, a type of performer, that they maybe all fit a similar mold. They're not entirely the same, but maybe WWE just don't serve that guy really well. But it's not like, they're not the greatest wrestlers, and they're not the most, they're not like the agile, flippy guy. They're just kind of like, you know, the brick shithouse sort of tough dude, the immovable object. And I don't know whether they've kind of forgotten how to present a character like that. Because I think of like you know, I imagine sometimes these sort of time-traveling transplant situations where, like, if the big boss man found himself around now, which I still wish he was, would he have got that character and that run? Because he's a similar kind of guy, you know, big guy, not the big guy, but they don't really, I just feel like that kind of, I can't quite put, I'm not really sure how.
It seems like they're almost kind of one-dimensional with them, right? Like, Ryback was on a winning streak, he was big, feeding time, feed me more, whatever, and then he lost, and then it was like, okay, well, now he's the guy who had a winning streak who lost, and actually, he's still big. I mean, they don't know how to book. It's so strange for a company that loves big men so much that they don't seem to really know what to do with them. Because if you look, I mean, look at even Big Show and Kane. Like, they don't know what to do with those guys.
Large. And you know what's really funny too is like, that's the stereotype with the WWE amongst all the smarts, right? Like, they go, Vince loves his bodybuilders. And it's like, well, if he loves his bodybuilders that much, why haven't we seen a successful one in a decade?
Yeah. What I was going to say was, I'll refer to these guys, they're like tight, as the Wrecking Ball, okay? Gallows or Ryback or Albert.
These Bull Dempsey.
Or Bull Dempsey. Yeah, exactly. And the problem with those characters is Wrecking Balls cannot exist in the era of 50-50 booking, because these guys can't lose a lot.
Right.
Because if they're not, you know, Ryback, when he was at his most over, was pretty much
when
just...
When he was winning.
Yeah, when he was just coming out and trashing guys. And it's not that they can never lose, but they can't be treated like, you know,
like every other guy.
Yeah, like a Sami Zayn or someone like that who can lose and come out of the other side, you know, because people go, ah, he's got that resilient spirit, you know, that's why we cheer him. Like, if Ryback, if he doesn't just mow through everybody, then what is there, like, oh, so he's just like this rubbish body guy.
Right.
Like, there's nothing. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe they just, you know, Wrecking Ball can't fit into 50-50 booking, but I guess we'll see what happens.
I will say, Andrew McGrillin was telling me that he absolutely does not see anything with Ryback, and I know he's wrong. I love Ryback. The WWE dropped the ball at Ryback. They would have allowed him to exude some of that natural personality and the natural charisma that we saw in some of the backstage segments and some of the WWE.com segments. He would have been a over personality, not the most over guy in the company, but he would have been a solid mid-card guy that people would have liked. A godfather for this generation, obviously a different character, but that level of talent.
He's talented on the mic and stuff. I mean, he's not great in the ring. I'll never
claim that
he's a great wrestler.
But he could have
a spot if they knew how to use him in his type of character. I think there's something to what you say.
That's the beauty of professional wrestling. Not everybody has to be a five-star worker in the ring. Not everybody has to be Enzo on the mic. Everybody can be a little bit different. And they got 3 hours.
It's a variety carnival freak show.
It is. That's exactly what it is. And they've got 3 hours to fill. Give us a little bit of everything. It's a buffet. If I go to the buffet, I want to try a little bit of everything. That's what wrestling should be. It should offer something for every type of fan. That way it keeps their interest week to week.
Well, you mentioned Enzo Amore there, so I think we will kick
I'm
off.
I'm glad you got that cue.
We'll kick off talking about Payback. No longer Ryback, which I nearly said Payback, by talking about, now I mentioned this on our other podcast earlier this week, that one of the things I really liked about the show was the statement of intent video at the start, where, you know, for the first time, I've never seen them do this before, really, with this much sort of putting a stamp on a show. The first pay-per-view of the new era, and they had an opening video with the newer guys, people that have been around for a little while in New Day, and then also, like, Sami Zayn and Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin, people like that, that they brought up in the past month. So I really enjoyed that. And then the ultimate, oh, God. They tried to kick off a new era with a fresh match on pay-per-view, on WWE pay-per-view at least. Enzo Amore and Big Cass versus the Vaudevillains with the number one contendership for the tag team titles on the line. And then, you know, minutes into the match, Enzo suffers that horrible-looking concussion. I think I've already detailed that when we were watching it on TV, it was very uncomfortable. It kind of reminded me of the Pero Aguayo thing, where it just looked like a sort of, like, oh God, is this something really bad? Because it doesn't look like the worst thing you've ever seen, or the most violent accident you've ever seen, or the most violent thing you've seen in a wrestling ring, full stop. But you just knew the whole vibe of the show changed for a little bit there. And I guess I've already said my piece, open up the floor, just for either of you to talk a little bit about this, or probably just do what we're going to do. And it's just, you know, say that we love Enzo Amore and we hope he gets back really soon.
Yeah. It was scary to watch. And I'll say, I just wanted to mention the new era video at the beginning of the show too. That meant a lot to me as a fan who has no investment in all of the nostalgia and all of the old stuff. Like, I've been watching for, you know, like 5-6 years now. So that's, you know, like this new era is like all my NXT kids that I've seen grow and learn, and now they're here, and it's really exciting, and it feels like actual change, which is awesome. And then to feed right into the Vaudevillains versus Enzo and Cass was a perfect way to kick it off, if Enzo hadn't gotten horribly injured, right? Like, it meant a lot to me to see them come out. It meant a lot to me to hear the, hey, Arnold, you know, and you're flexing like you're Arnold, more like, hey, Arnold, you know, stoop kid afraid to leave a stoop. It meant a lot to me to hear that on a pay-per-view, because I love that line, and I remember when he used it in NXT, right? But, no, watching the show was interesting. It was actually kind of funny, like, in a slapstick comedy kind of way. Like, when Enzo got hurt, at first, I was looking down for a second. I missed the injury at first, and my friend that I was watching it with was like, oh, is he actually hurt? I was like, I don't think he is, like, because Enzo's really good at flopping and looking like he's dying or whatever. But then when I saw the replay, I was like, oh, shit. And I was sitting, like, on the edge of the couch that I was sitting on. My friend was also sitting on the edge of the couch, and like, he's a really big guy, and the couch actually almost like fell forward because both of us were so like intent and watching. So yeah, we almost flipped over a couch because we were so concerned about Enzo. But thankfully, it's not as bad as it could have been. I didn't have as bad of a feeling as I think everybody else did. So maybe that helped me enjoy the next match a little bit more. But I felt bad for the vaudevillains also.
Yeah.
Because everything just got cut, you know. And it did make me nervous watching the replay when Simon Gotch grabbed Enzo by the head. That was uncomfortable. But
well, the beauty, obviously, of the roundtable is that we've all been able to see Raw. In fact, I don't think we've even mentioned this, but David, you were there live. It was in your home city or just home state? Did you travel to watch it?
Home city. I traveled 15 minutes to go see it.
Oh, fantastic. So the follow-on, I guess, on Raw from this was, well, two things of note, I thought. One, the vaudevillains taking claim for Enzo's injury. And also, an almost, I don't really know, how would you word it? Cass gets to team up with the New Day, and there was almost a kind of, we know last night must have been really shit for you guys, and it sucks that Enzo's not here, so we're going to put together this segment that really makes Cass look awesome. Because I thought he looked like he was having a lot of fun. He seemed very confident on the microphone.
Yeah, he did.
That's something people don't give Cass enough credit for. He is also very good. And the last time Enzo Amore got injured in NXT, sorry to keep bringing it back to that, but the last time Enzo Amore got injured was when Big Cass really came into his own. He started giving promos. He did a singing contest with Aiden English. That was the greatest segment in the history of NXT. Maybe save Bo Dallas coming back as Mr. NXT and getting unmasked, whatever. But, like, they're neck and neck, right? So this could be an opportunity for Big Cass to shine because Enzo has a very large personality. He's a small dude, but he has a large personality and tends to overshadow the room when he's in the room. And, you know, Cass is another realist guy in the room, and he's great.
The whenever we were there in person, the crowd went ape whenever that music hit because they thought that Enzo was coming out. And whenever he didn't, you could tell it kind of sucked the air out of the room a little bit. And they were like, oh, God, you know. He can't even come here and talk. This must be really bad. Big Cass, though, he was great. That was a on Raw, that was a crowning moment, I think. I think that's the type of thing that in a few years from now, Big Cass reminds me a lot of Test. So whenever I see him, I automatically think of Test. And Test was another guy who you kind of overlooked at first, and then over time he became more of a player. And I have a feeling this was going to be like the seed, the planted seed for Big Cass. And in a few years, whenever he goes solo and he has a good run, I think we're going to look back at this and go, yeah, that was the moment where they had enough confidence in him to allow this to happen. The thing that I hated about the Enzo thing was how often they showed the replay, because it looked brutal.
Yeah.
Whenever I saw it happen live, I immediately said, he's hurt. He's hurt for real. I don't know. And then just immediately I was having flashbacks to Owen Hart, and I was having flashbacks to Darren Drozdov, and I was just sort of overtaken with fear for the guy, and it honestly ruined the rest of my night, because we didn't know until very late into the show that he was actually moving his arms and legs. At least I didn't hear it.
They mentioned that during the Kevin Owens Sami Zayn match.
Did they? I didn't even hear it, so that put a damper on my entire evening from then on. And so, like, right out of the gate, you have this match that we were all looking very forward to, and for absolutely no circumstance, for absolutely no reason within their circumstances, it ended in a really bad fashion, right? Like, you know, taking aside the health of Enzo and everything else, that was a match that we were really wanting to see, and it had a no contest finish. So automatically, from a wrestling standpoint, it kind of started on a sour note for me. And then
shouldn't
for
the vaudevillains have won?
Yeah, technically, yeah. I mean, you know, because when it happened to
Daniel Bryan live, Randy Orton won.
Right. That was my reasoning too. But I mean, all of this is just window dressing. I mean, the real issue was making sure that Enzo was safe. So I was okay with the no contest, but I wish, like, the next night on Raw, they would have said, well, they were declared winners by forfeit due to referee stoppage, you know, something like that.
And the,
for continuity's sake.
The vaudevillains are now the number one contenders, right? They are gonna they're going up against the New Day Extreme Rules.
Yes. And they were planned to win anyway. By the way, I correctly predicted this. The Dudley Boys were due to run in and cost Enzo and Cass the match, which I correctly predicted. Just saying, really smart guy over here.
Indeed. So what they did next was something that I enjoyed. Incredibly, they remembered that they don't have to segment everything to within an inch of its life, and they can in fact stitch bits together and tell stories, because Payback, for a glorious period of time, became the Kevin Owens Variety Hour. So we had Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and their grudge match with a really great video package that detailed their history, old photographs. It's great that they have this legitimate friendship to play on, and they can play on this for years, and I think they will. That was followed up with the Intercontinental title match with The Miz and Cesaro, which, after Kevin Owens won his match against Sami, he stuck around to do commentary for the Intercontinental title match, and then towards the end of that, Sami Zayn would reappear to attack Kevin Owens, and all four of their destinies would be gloriously stitched together, leading to the stuff on Raw, which is now we know is going to be leading to some kind of fatal four-way, I believe, at Extreme Rules. So as a whole package, I really enjoyed the way that they knitted all this together. I thought Kevin and Sami had a really, really, really great match. But I know that in bigger circumstances, at bigger events, they're gonna one up it. And Owens won clean, because these guys can trade wins, or Kevin Owens can win lots of times because we're gonna keep laying our 999 down to finally see Sami Zayn vanquish him, because we love him that much. And then his my favorite line from Kevin Owens was he was talking to Michael Cole and Byron Saxton, and say he said something.
You're just like The Rock, forgetting old Byron Saxton's name.
I know. Yeah. Never compare
Poor
me to
Byron.
The Rock.
He said, a chair stolen.
And he said, I'm a much better commentator than you, and I'm just as good as JBL. Like, even at his most heelish, he's still like a total suck-up prick to the bad guys, and I really enjoy that. And I thought Cesaro and Miz, I thought Miz looked great. Like, I saw Brian Alvarez put out a tweet, and he said, like, oh, we've got this great triple threat match and they're sticking in The Miz. And I'm like, no, I thought Miz was good in this match. I'm glad he's in there with these guys. Alvarez seems to think it's like WWE think they need to have a star in there with the indie guys. And I just don't really, I'm not sure.
No,
I
think
buy
The Miz
that.
Has earned it. I think The Miz has had some really good matches recently. The Miz had great matches with Zack Ryder.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed those.
I won't go as far to say that Miz has had great matches, but I will say that he is one of the more compelling heel personas on the show. And I think putting his large personality into that mix, I think it's a positive thing, and I think it gives him something meaningful to do.
Well, and I think it helps not segment, okay, here are the indie guys, or here are the, NXT guys, or whatever. It helps it become a full show. It was the same kind of feeling I got, actually, in the tag match on Raw with Big Cass and the New Day versus, it was, the Dudleys and the Vaudevillains. I think I tweeted, like, this is a lot of eras of WWE working together right now. You have the NXT segment, you have the Dudleys, you have Kofi Kingston kind of tying it all together. And it was cool to see because it works, everything, it can have everything. Like, it's supposed to be a variety carnival freak show. And I really like when they put all of the elements in there instead of segmenting it. Like, it's the same reason I've never liked having a Divas division and a women's division, for similar reasons. It needs to feel like a fully formed whole.
You know what, though, Sandra? I absolutely agree with that, and I hadn't thought of that. That is a perfect point. It's exactly the inverse of what Brian Alvarez is saying. And I love Brian Alvarez. I used to subscribe to the Figure Four 20 years ago. He's an old man now. But with Brian, though, he seems to think that the WWE has this need to impose their characters into here, as to where I see it as using The Miz as a welcome mat for all of these other guys. and allow these guys to walk all over The Miz. Hey, The Miz is one of the guys who's getting the most heat these days, right? So, and Maryse is a good package with him. Thank God my wife's not here to hear me say all this, by the way. I would not be getting laid for at least 4 years. But for real though, I think he's earned his way into this more so than they've earned their way to face him. So I think that we agree with Brian, but we see it literally in the opposite way here.
Do we like the direction they're taking it with these four guys, all part of the Intercontinental title scene? I actually kind of like, well, I don't want to get into predictions, especially not with the master of predictions, David Hutchin, on the show. I don't want to look like a fool, but I would quite like if Sammy pinned The Miz to become the Intercontinental Champion, and it sent Owens into like a furious rage, and he'd be like,
"Yes,
but I beat him! I beat him last month. He shouldn't have even been in this match, and now he got my Intercontinental title." And sort of give Owens this sort of entitled, like brat sort of thing that it's like he shouldn't even have been there. And I think that would be quite enjoyable to kind of carry on their story. I mean, I think that these two guys, you know, the Batman Joker meme, it's the truth. Like, they could be wrestling on pay-per-view every few months for the next 5 years, and I'd be cool with it. Like, their chemistry.
You absolutely predicted it right, by the way. I'm the master of predictions. I know that is exactly the way it's going to shake out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That makes me really, really wish that Sami Zayn had never pinned Kevin Owens on Raw.
Yeah, right.
Let's hope everybody else.
Because, like, I mean, he can still say, you've never pinned me in a singles match, one-on-one, whatever. But wouldn't it be just a better talking point to say Sami Zayn has never pinned Kevin Owens?
Yeah, no.
Because in NXT, Sami Zayn, and we still have that looming thread that I'm wondering if they're ever going to pick up, that Sami Zayn never got pinned for the NXT championship either.
Yeah.
It was all ref stoppage. And the way that they're referencing the history of those two, they might bring that up if a title gets thrown into their feud mix. I think the possibilities are cool. And I really like the Fatal 4-Way for a reason that I said. It's making the Intercontinental title, which, you know, I'm still a little wary of the Intercontinental belt. I still think it might be cursed, but maybe some of that curse is moving on. Like, maybe it's done its evil, and maybe it can be a thing that people want again. And it's making the belt feel important because multiple people want it, right? Like, Kevin Owens is still obsessed with getting it back, and he hasn't, you know, it's been a month since he fought for the Intercontinental title. What? He remembers that? He remembers that he had that thing? Craziness, right?
Like, I think he's doing a better job of anybody who's held it since, including Daniel Bryan, to make that belt feel like it matters again, because he wants it so bad.
He wants it so bad that he sat in on commentary for the... Yeah, for the title match, he had to stick around to see it. And then, you know, he has to insert, I mean, he's been bringing it up, right? Like saying like, no, I want my belt back. I want my belt back. And having multiple people want it, not just the two who are fighting over it, makes it seem like an important thing. And it makes, you know, it makes the belt more important. It makes the guys more important. It makes everything more important. It makes me care.
To throw it back, I love the match between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. I've seen just about all of their Ring of Honor matches. I would say that this is one of their worst matches that they've had, and that's absolutely not to discourage how great it is.
They're just that good.
Anytime you get them together, this was the best match on the card by far. I don't even think that's up for discussion.
I think it was the best one, but
it was the only one that had a clean finish.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And as for the Intercontinental title match, it was fine until the finish, and then Kevin Nash from 1999 WCW was booking this pay-per-view, so there was a hodgepodge run-in and a non-finish, and it made no sense, and it's just to set up other things that we'll inevitably also have to pay for. So, wasn't huge on the IC match, but loved Zayn and Owens. They're the best.
Yeah, I guess the Intercontinental title match itself was sacrificed to make room for the the sort of Sami Zayn, literally Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens literally spilling into the Intercontinental title match. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting with Kenny in the bar, and I think Sami's going to come back out and attack Kevin Owens, and that's going to impact. Now, I'm not stepping on the toes of the Master of Predictions, but I called it, and I was just like, yes, because like, it's what I wanted to see. So when the Miz got like the roll up of Doom, I actually liked it, because I thought, oh, this is quite perfect that he would, you know, because that gives everybody beef with everybody. Sami and, you know, Kevin hate each other. Cesaro is not very happy with them because they cost him the match, and the Miz can be smug about, you know, ah, well, I'm still the champ, and everybody kind of gets to play their part, which
have a prediction for Cesaro. I think he's going to be the next guy to challenge Roman Reigns after Roman Reigns gets done burying AJ Styles.
Well, you brought that B word up too early. We'll talk about the B word later.
We'll talk about that.
So, well, oh, right. Dean Ambrose and Chris Jericho was next, and I saw this on paper, and I thought, okay, this is going to be good, and then it's not that it was bad, but
it was long.
Guys, I just really, really don't care about Dean Ambrose.
No, that's because if Dean Ambrose could wrestle matches the way Dean Ambrose builds two matches, that would be great. As it stands, Dean Ambrose's offense is terrible, and I don't really want to see him wrestle.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point that I also never... Sandra, you're killing it, this podcast. Come on, Robert, step your game up, Robert.
God damn it. Didn't take my performance enhancers.
Seriously, though, I never thought about that. His build to his matches is phenomenal. I love to hear Dean Ambrose talk whenever he's kind of... at least just using the humor to accentuate his purpose and his intentions. But if he's being serious, I love to hear Dean Ambrose talk. I think that he's wonderful on the mic. But what he brings to back it up in the ring doesn't do much for me, no.
The baby punches, like, he doesn't have anything behind his offense, and it's frustrating because it really takes me out of it. And I know a lot of people are big fans of Dean Ambrose, and I've always, like, David, you and I bonded over the fact that we're like, no, Dean Ambrose, worst punches in wrestling, awesome. Yeah, like, yeah. I have a better working punch than Dean Ambrose, right? And
right,
that's,
right,
like,
right.
I do. So, it's, and it's not like I've done this for a long time, right? But... I've been told by reputable people, actually.
Yeah, what's really sad to me is, like, we agree with Mark Madden on something. So I'm like, oh, man, I feel really gross now. I feel all greasy just by proxy.
The match was fine. You know, I think they went about 20 minutes, but I just was not into it. I didn't really care. Although I do love heel Jericho, and I'm sad that, you know, he's pretty much going to be gone soon because it seems like he's going to be stepping out for... another one of his musical interludes. And
did he grab a Palestinian flag at this? I know they cut away. It was some kind of flag and I missed it.
I think he tried to snatch it, but didn't get it.
Yeah, and then the camera just cut away immediately. They're
yeah,
like,
not again with
jail.
The flags.
Chris Jericho should probably just stay away from flags.
Yeah, I agree. This carried on onto Raw. I thought this was over. And I think, you know, Kenny, as much as it begrudges me to say, made quite a good point on a previous Inside the Ropes where they said that, you know, the problem with Ambrose is that they put him into the high-profile matches and he loses, and then they seem to think, well, we can just put him over a Chris Jericho, a sort of reputable, solid hand that's been around for a long time, and that will sort of make up for it. And it's like, well, not really. I mean, I didn't want him to go over Brock at WrestleMania, to be honest, but... you know, I don't really know if a win here did much for him. And I'm kind of sad that it's not Jericho getting another pay-per-view win and going for Roman. I'd quite like to see Chris Jericho and Roman Reigns. Just a one-time pay-per-view match for that title. Roman can win, I don't mind. But I don't think that's going to happen. And it looks like this, you know, this story, I use the word loosely, will continue. They did the Ambrose Asylum segment on Raw with Stephanie McMahon. And there was a thing with a plant, which I guess is the goofy thing, because it's Ambrose, he's... they say he's crazy, but he's actually just a goofball, which I feel like he should be dangerous, but he doesn't really...
I don't know. I think Dean Ambrose might actually believe that the plant, you know, had a personality and he might just be that insane.
But this feud will continue. Are we enthused about seeing these guys go at it again?
No,
I don't think so. I mean, even with a stipulation.
I thought the match itself was fine. I thought that it went about 8 minutes too long, something like that, you know. Ballpark of a little bit over 10 minutes for something like this, I think.
Do you think they added time to it?
They did add time to it, and I think that hurt the match. So I try not to slag these guys off too much. I mean, they had to pick up the pace from earlier in the night with the Enzo thing happening. So, you know, it's really hard for me to be too down on them. I enjoyed the match for what it was. I thought that it was a fine contest and not anything I care to see again. But maybe they're going to give it to him one last time because their match kind of had to be artificially inflated for this pay-per-view.
Well, and I mean, I don't know if I completely agree that winning over Jericho doesn't do anything for Dean Ambrose, especially if he beats him again at Extreme Rules to send Jericho off into the Fozzy land or whatever.
True.
Because that's, you know, that's a feud that he will have won twice in a row.
Right.
Over someone who is reputable. I mean, right. Maybe that was the reason behind putting Chris Jericho over AJ Styles at WrestleMania. Like, even though that probably wasn't the reason.
Right. My thing Ambrose, is, like, I don't know. What is Ambrose supposed to do after this anyway, though? Like, so, you know.
I don't know. That's not my job. That's theirs.
Yeah, but they do it very poorly, is my point. What do you think, Robert? Where does Ambrose go on from here to where he could be in something that matters and is meaningful?
Honestly, I think Ambrose is just treading water until that happens. Yeah, because I feel like, well, I mean, I get increasingly irritated with the Uso thing because I don't really know how they're going to. I mean, how do they do that where Roman goes, well, these guys suck. I better get the Shield back together to fight the Bullet Club. I don't know how that story plot point happens, really, to be honest. So I hope it does, though. And I get the feeling, yeah, I think Ambrose is just kind of ticking over until a certain CrossFit Jesus gets healthy, and maybe they join the fight against AJ.
The Good Brothers?
And, yeah, Gallows and Anderson. But I'm not really sure because, I mean, I don't think we're going to see another Roman Dean match. I wouldn't really be interested in that because
just going to win. Right? Exactly.
We all know how that ends. I mean,
we've seen it so many times. Now.
I don't mean that in the whiny fan way, but the only way that match could be made interesting is if Ambrose beats him, and I don't really think that's where they want to go. So I don't want to see it. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. But then he's been such an aimless, directionless character for quite some time. So. I don't know. I don't particularly want to see him float back into the IC title thing either.
No, I like that the way it is right now.
Yeah, I don't really
know. But I also don't want to see him feud with the Big Show.
Well, no. That would be a bad thing. But let's.
Idea. Maybe Randy Orton comes back.
Uh-oh. It's crazy versus crazy.
Yeah, see that? That
I think
that
I'm a snake. My best friend is a plant.
All right. Wild stuff. But we'll move on now to the WWE Women's Championship match. And this is somewhat of a big budget remake because this match with the same participants at ringside happened in NXT 2 years ago. Charlotte with her father.
It was better then, even if they couldn't figure out the figure four.
Charlotte with her father / groomer, Ric Flair, taking on Natalya with her uncle / curmudgeon, Bret Hart, without his 4 out of 10 sign, which I'm very gutted about.
My spirit animal, Bret Hart.
Yeah, you love Bret. And he's looking good. I think if Kenny Mack here, you would have something. If he was here, I think he'd have something to say about his. It's paunch, but we're not that type of people.
I'm happy after doing all that chemotherapy. He can have all the paunch he wants, man.
I agree. I think I'm going to give him a pass on the looks, but I think
absolutely.
Kenny just opts for the slick back
hair. He had a full head of hair after chemo, man. That props.
So, Yeah, they did this match in NXT. I remember it being very good at the time. I have not revisited it, but I very much enjoyed it. It ended with, you know, a bit of a... Like some of the NXT matches do, they tend to go for that sort of mutual respect, everyone's crying thing that happens. And I enjoy that.
Charlotte was on the road to being a babyface at that point anyway.
Yeah.
She was about to split from Sasha.
And so we knew that something would probably go on here. But not... I mean, I didn't... Stupidly did not anticipate what they did do, because... They can't really have Bret Hart there. You know, why would they not bring up probably one of the worst nights of his professional wrestling career, if not his life? And I only say if not his life because, by God, he's had a few shit nights. Yeah.
Hey, if there's one guy who's earned the right to be as bitter as he is, it's Bret Hart.
It definitely That's is true. Bret Hart. But they did the Montreal finish, and... So Charlotte gets Natalya into the sharpshooter, and the, you know, referee rings the bell, and the gag, if you're a wrestling fan of 20 years, is that Charles Robinson, the referee, is, you know, Little Nate. He used to be pally with Ric Flair in WCW. If you're a wrestling fan of, say, less than that amount of time, maybe like 5 or 6 years. I don't know, Sandra, this is why I was interested in talking to you, because I saw a lot of people that didn't get it, and the commentary team didn't. I think they made a passing reference to it, but I think JBL said something about Little Nate, but that was one of the times where I really needed the commentary team to be the storytellers, and yes, they did do some of it on Raw, which is fine, but I just think that the Montreal thing, they've done it so many times.
And why? Just...
Let me interject. To bury Bret Hart for saying all those terrible things that he said about the company last week.
Well, I don't think that buries Bret Hart at all, because they look dominant. I don't think that's the issue. It just, for me, it sort of devalues what we've been doing in the women's division, and not for the reason that I've seen talked about online. I've seen a lot of people say, you know, oh yeah, we're ushering in this new era of women's wrestling by surrounding ourselves with the stories of men from 20 years ago. That's not the issue for me. It's more having such a screwball finish that isn't really going to have consequence, right? And on Raw, we saw it didn't really have consequence. They had the interview segment or whatever, but it's not like you had Shane coming out and doing something. I mean, Stephanie said we're going to have a submission match and Ric Flair is banned from ringside. Like, okay. But, like... It just seemed so corny and so stupid. And the only reason I know about Charles Robinson being Lil Nate is because I've heard him referenced as that. And I listened to him on Chris Jericho's podcast. And so, like, I do know that story, but otherwise I wouldn't.
You had to go searching for it.
Yeah. I mean, it's historical knowledge that, yes, I have come across, but it's not like I lived through it. It's not like most of the wrestling audience that they're aiming this product to lived through it, because they weren't alive. So, like, I think it was Brandon Stroud on Twitter said, as a reminder, if the Montreal Screwjob were a person, it would be graduating from high school right now.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you can look at it as the only positive, I suppose, is, you know, they made it the women's title, they're superstars instead of divas, and now they get their own shittily booked finish in a featured match on pay-per-view, so maybe they are finally being treated just like the guys.
Equality. But it just, it was really flat, and especially for a match that I think everyone was looking forward to. And the Natalya-Charlotte match from 2 years ago, I didn't like it as much as some of the other women's matches that they put on, that Charlotte put on later. I think Charlotte and Natty was very, very good. I think Emma and Paige don't get enough credit for what they did the month or the, you know, special before or whatever. But the match was good. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't like the most outstanding match to begin with. And then the finish was terrible, but I thought the wrestling was really good in it. So it just kind of negated everything that they'd been doing too. Like, and then what are the repercussions for Charles Robinson? Because a heel referee, like what happens when you turn heel as a referee, you get taken off television, right? So I just,
here's the thing, right? So like Shane and Stephanie are ushering in a new era of, you know, justice and everything else. Where the hell were they?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Especially, later in the night, did they not restart a match because they weren't going to have any screwy finishes?
Well, I will.
That's all this pay-per-view was.
I will leap to the defense of they. This happened before the segment where Shane and Stephanie were. So I mean, I still agree. Like, I still think, you know, they could have done something with regards to that. But that's not the story they wanted to tell. And obviously, the stuff in the main event happened after the segment where Stephanie and Shane came out and they were told about the... So I think that's the... I can kind of see it. I can see
why. Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
It did happen after that. So I guess the theory... Oh, they're busy backstage and they're...
What about the next night on Raw?
Well, I don't. Well. Let's talk about it. What do you guys think about the follow-up to this?
I'm looking forward to the submissions match. I'm looking forward to this continuing. I think it's kind of cool that Natalia's gotten inserted into the title scene because, like, when I talk about wanting the women's division to feel like a fully formed whole, that means not having the same three women vying for the title all the time, only those three. Because that happened in NXT for a while. It was only the four of them, and everybody else was very, very separate. And I like that Natalia, who damn well deserves some recognition for the years she's put in and whatnot. I mean, I'm not like the biggest Natalia fan, but she is very, very good. Not at speaking so much, but at wrestling she is.
She's been a lot better lately, too, though.
Yeah, well, that SmackDown segment was brutal. The one where Ric Flair told Natalia to kill herself and they had to edit it. Yeah. I was glad it was edited just because it was shorter. Like, that was really tough to get through. It was not good. But, I mean, I get what they're trying to do, like, leading into a submission match. And I assume there will be exchanges of figure fours and sharpshooters. And now that they've actually figured out how to reverse the pressure of a figure four after 2 years, like, that's a little more positive. But, I don't know. It all feels kind of flat to me. And it feels like veering from the direction of the women's division that we've had. Although there is some other women's stuff going on that was pretty exciting too. So
my thoughts on everything. I love Little Nate. I've been a Little Nate mark for 20 years. I love Little Nate. Whenever that happened, I went ballistic. I was screaming at the top of my lungs, unlike any other point during the entire pay-per-view. I loved it. It made me happy. The match itself was not nearly as good as their match that they had at Roadblock. That match was phenomenal. This was kind of eh. And for those counting at home, this was the third match on the pay-per-view thus far with a screwy finish.
Was it?
Yes. You had Enzo and Cass.
Ah, that doesn't count.
It happened. It happened, though. Whether we want to or not, that was a non-finish. And that's unfortunate. But facts are facts. It was a non-finish. And if you debate that it's a non-finish, look at the historical document. It was a no decision. So that was the first one. Then with the second one, we had the Intercontinental Hodgepodge. And this was the third. So let's carry on.
It didn't really bother me that much. But I guess we'll really get into this when we have the big fight.
I think they were also different as non-finishes, too. That
doesn't really matter. Psycho Sid can run out and kill a bunch of luchadors on Monday Nitro. And then later on, Hulk Hogan can have the NWO all run out and get a DQ win. It's all the same to me, though. That's all I'm saying.
So then the next segment we had was Shane and Stephanie's... Well, the reveal, the destiny of their future. What was going to happen? Did anyone really care? I didn't. This is the one thing. I say that the card looked great on paper. This is the one thing I didn't really care that much about. I did enjoy. What I really liked was the fact that when Vince came out, the crowd were like, really, they were like, yeah, like really, really, yeah, really happy to see Vince and stuff. And they waited 2 hours. Not a single hint of it. For 2 hours, and as soon as the music stopped and Vince raises the microphone to his mouth, they launch into the CM Punk chant. Now, for me, the Punk chant was getting a bit old. I'm part of it. Guys, just get over it. But the kind of collective hive mind mentality of, let's wait. Let's wait and do it at the exact correct moment to visibly shake Vince, I did kind of enjoy it. The only thing that I wish had happened was I wish Vince had thrown shade at Punk to wind up the crowd. Because he got into it a little bit later on, like, shut up, and all that kind of stuff, which was great. But I think in the moment, he's not, I don't think he's as sharp, nor would he be. I mean, he's a lot older. I don't think he's as sharp as he used to be. But I just was like, oh, please insult him. Please. Like, just be like, you know, CM Punk. What's wrong? You want me to go home? Just anything. Anything that would hint at some kind of insult. But
He's not here tonight. He left, remember?
Yeah, remember when he left you guys? But just anything. And then, so he brings out, you know, brings out Shane and Stephanie. It goes on, probably, I mean, again, I'm not going to, I mean, a lot of people have called bullshit on how long this went. I don't think this is, they had a lot of time, you know, they lost a tag match, so I figured that they were going to have to go longer. And I think the problem for me with this segment was, is like, even to the fundamentals, they base this down to a sort of yes or no, black or white, this person or this person, because the crescendo of it was Shane doing the thing with his hand, you know, over his own head, they cheer, over Stephanie's head, they boo. So then to basically announce that, you know, you're both going to run it, which I think was, you know, probably could have seen it coming, is, I felt like as a segment, I thought it ended very flatly. I think the crowd were like, oh. Like when the music hit and they were all leaving, the crowd were just kind of not interested in it. But as a direction for the show, I am... This is the opposite of the card. Like, the card on paper looked great. This on paper, Shane and Stephanie Cole, Wilson Ross. I get it. I get why people are tweeting saying, oh, this is like a 16-year-old story. It's been done. And all that kind of stuff. Like, I totally get it. Like, yeah. Yeah, you're right. It has been done. But I can't help but feel that the history and the fact that Shane was gone and that they seem to be, and I still don't really get why, they seem to be quite willing to let him, you know, quote-unquote, shoot a little bit when he's, you know, making comments. And, you know, he said that line about, you know, Stephanie's poisonous attitude dripped all the way from her, from the boardroom to the locker room and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, whoa, Jesus. So I think that the dynamic for me, and I might live to regret saying it, I think by SummerSlam I'll be desperate for this not to be a thing, because I don't, I think I'm in a camp of my own here. Like, I don't want to see Team Steph versus Team Shane. I've got no interest whatsoever in that happening. If there has to be a team versus team thing over the summer, you know, you've got...
it has to be club. Triple H versus Shane, doesn't it?
I don't want to see that either.
I don't want to see that either, but I agree with you, Sandra. Me and Kenny have debated this back and forth. If it's a team versus team, it's just Team Johnny versus Team Teddy. I don't care.
The teams aren't going to be invested in either side.
Right. And so, Robert... We may disagree on some of the stuff with this pay-per-view. With this, we absolutely agree. You know what, actually? This segment killed Shane McMahon for me. It truly did.
I didn't like him here.
Yeah. He's been weaker and weaker week to week, and Stephanie's been upping her game in this segment and especially in Raw. And just putting them in contrast, he's really looking bad here. Oh man, this is going to be a thing that we're going to have to contend with all summer, isn't it?
I think that what I was going to say was that I feel like the dynamic between them is so different to what it was when they did a similar thing many, many years ago, more years than I care to remember, that right now I'm kind of like, oh, okay, like, I'll give it a go. I think enough, they're very different people now, they're very different characters now. It's been a long time, so I'm willing to give it a go, but I feel it already in my mind. I know I'm going to get sick of it, and I don't know how different it's going to be to the, you know, the authority, and I don't really know how it's going to go. Like, they're going to try and recruit people to their side, or blah, 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 blah. And I think it's still interesting that we are 2-3 months into Shane's return, and he has yet to share any screen time with a certain Triple H. And if you believe those nasty dirt sheets, Triple H was not a fan of Shane and Undertaker being a match. I mean, I think we were eventually all on his side. Well, I was anyway. But I don't know if that's a real thing, whether they really don't get on very well. But I just think that, you know, how many more weeks can they credit Shane McMahon with bringing up the NXT guys before they have to address the fact that that's Triple H's gig and those are his guys? I don't know. And I don't know if they will. Maybe they don't want to. Maybe they don't want them to encounter each other. But I guess
it seems like a dead end creative situation.
Yeah, where do you go with it? You know,
right, exactly. It's just a story I don't want to see.
Because how do you sell? So say they do Shane versus Triple H, or Team Shane versus Team Stephanie, or you know, trial by combat. They each pick one guy, like Bobby Lashley versus Umaga from WrestleMania. And they do something like that. Like, how do you sell a match at SummerSlam? How do you tell people, you know, to keep your subscription or pay your pay-per-view money for a match at SummerSlam where the creative control of the company is at stake, when not 5 months ago at WrestleMania, you had a match with the creative control of the company at stake and it mattered not one shit to the creative direction. You can't sell the same bag of shite twice, okay? You can't tell us.
It would be the third time. Remember when the Authority got vanquished for good?
Well, yeah,
for 100%
okay.
For
yeah.
good and came back 6 weeks later?
So after Shane and Undertaker and the battle for the control of the WWE, the soul of the WWE on the line, you can't at the very next SummerSlam turn around and say, Shane's going to wrestle, blah, 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 or this is what's going to happen, and somebody's going to get control because, I mean, why would you get excited for it? Because you know that they could potentially just say the next night, ah, Shane's still in charge, or, you know.
Well, that's why these stories have no drama for me, and they haven't ever since, was it 2012 that Triple H became the coup and, like, everybody walked out and nobody cared? Well, maybe people cared. I didn't care.
2011,
okay. I knew it was earlier on in my wrestling fandom.
Oh, yeah, and he sent Vince home and they cried.
Yeah. That's the first, like, change of hands authority thing that I saw as a wrestling fan that mattered. So I didn't live through 16 years ago and all of the McMahon drama then and all of that stuff. So I don't have any, like, oh, it's just rehashing. I think you're right, Robert, that this is a very different situation. But I still think it's a story I'm not interested in seeing just based on the past 6 years because, like, and the fact that they keep referencing Shane as an on-screen boss does not help. Because they keep saying that. Like, they put article headlines that said that Shane McMahon is a great on-screen boss. It's like, okay.
I tweeted that. Yeah. I tweeted, like, it out. And I'm like, seriously? Wow, you guys just aren't even buying into your own.
Yeah, that was dumb. I couldn't believe they said that. Did you
that, like, I saw that on Raw, and I was just like, that's not a great headline to be showing on your program where I'm supposed to be invested in this. And, like, what I've seen just in the past 6 years is, like, whenever you have these authority storylines, there's no end game because it's just the McMahon circle jerk of authority. Like, yeah. Triple H can come and relieve Vince, you're relieved of your duties, and it's all emotional and teary eyed or whatever. And then Triple H can get all too big for his britches or sleeves, and Vince can come back and be like, okay, the board of directors says this, pal, like, I'm back. Okay, awesome. And then Stephanie's in charge randomly when she comes back. So, okay, that's fine. Now Shane and Stephanie are both in charge, so they're just going to be fighting. Like, there's no end game because Vince is still in control of it all, and we know that. And they're telling us on screen that this is only on screen anyway, so nothing's really going to change. And that's,
Sandra,
I guess, just why I'm not that interested.
Sandra, if you're this tired of this after 5 years, how do you think we feel after 20 years?
Exhausted, I'm sure.
There's never a payoff with any of this. It's never interesting to me. I hate the McMahons. I stopped watching wrestling because of the McMahons. Whenever they all had their own company and their own power struggle, I couldn't tolerate it. I couldn't stomach it. It was making me physically nauseous to watch. So I cleansed, I purged, I no longer watched wrestling until around the time that you got into it. So I got back into it in 2011, around the time that you got into it. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic. CM Punk's really cool. And then what happened? Kevin Nash came out and powerbombed him. And I was like, oh, this is foreshadowing. I can sense it. I can sense it. Kevin Nash is powerbombing some of my favorites again. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
The thing that amused me the most, I don't know if I tweeted this, because I was sitting with Kenny watching this show, and they put up the Rolling Stone headline that said, Shane McMahon soars. And I was looking at it, and I went, I think they've clipped something out of that. And he was like, nah, that's like too, it'll be picked up. And the thing is, I didn't see anybody else pick up on it. I thought it was just me, but I don't have enough people checking my Twitter to make it in any way notorious, but I'm sure I've seen it. And then I remembered, I mentioned it on an episode of Inside the Ropes because they had done a segment where they showed a headline from Rolling Stone, and then I saw this headline, and I said to Kenny or possibly one of you guys, I bet they don't ever use this headline, because the full headline is Shane McMahon soars, Triple H bores. And they just and I went and found it because I was like, Kenny, I'm so sure. And I went and found it and I screenshotted it and then I put it on Twitter. And they have just, like, missed out. So I love it that somebody backstage is like, I guess we should maybe just cut that bit out so Paul doesn't get upset. It's just wild.
That's
because
hilarious. Because wouldn't that add to the story?
Well, maybe, but then it is again, though. Like, so they're not even thinking...
Except Triple H has evaporated, apparently.
Are they never going to refer to... Is Triple H and Shane never going to cross paths because they don't allegedly...
I think they're saving it for the big confrontation, aren't they? Like, they kept Triple H off TV before he won the Royal Rumble so that it would be the big quote-unquote surprise. Like, now he's off TV for a little while so that it can be McMahon family drama, and then Stephanie can bring him in as a big reveal or something, and he'll fight you. And, that's just what I'm guessing.
Terrible. Just terrible.
So, if I have learned anything from multiple times watching Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, it is this. You should always come out firing. So listen up, David J. McCutcheon, to this.
Oh.
At the Royal Rumble, AJ Styles debuts at number 2 and goes like 60 minutes in that match. Massive, massive reaction to him. He's on TV every week. They give him a featured match at WrestleMania, which he does lose. But he did have the match at Fastlane as well with Jericho. The next night, he becomes number 1 contender. They bring in another team to flank him from Japan. They talk about it on WWE.com. They let him keep his name. They don't send him to NXT. They bring him right into the main roster and put him on there. And they make him a character. And they let him do his thing pretty much. And then he becomes number 1 contender. Everybody's really excited. He has the main event of Payback. And then they put him on ESPN this week as well. I just genuinely don't know how. I mean, I have issues with this main event, Roman Reigns versus AJ Styles. That's what makes interesting conversation. But I hate to use the W word. I hate to say wrong, but I just think it's wrong to say that they're burying AJ Styles.
I never said that they're burying him yet. I said they're on the road to burying him. After Raw, especially. Here's the thing, Kenny.
Oh.
Well,
I'm doing silent laughter.
Good night, everyone.
Ah, so good, so good. Here's the thing, Kenny. here's the thing, though, Robert, right? Like, all I do is disagree with Kenny all day. So the second I go to disagree with him, with anyone, I just assume it's him, right? That's the thing. I'm used to you being so sweet and so kind to me. And here you are on your show bringing me, a guest, into your home. And you're going to put me on the spot? That's something that Kenny would do, Robert.
Well, McCutcheon, the simple fact is I'm not some chump running some website. You can't just push me around with your words and get your own way. I'm not going to start cutting you checks. So, no.
Cut checks for twice as much, Kenny. You're leaving that part out. This is my new thing now.
Okay, but in all seriousness, I know you said you were on the road to the burial thing, but I just thought that if anything, just my general opinion on the match, and we'll get into the stoppages and all that kind of stuff. Which, I mean, I did see someone tweet, and I think it's a valid thing, I guess, to say, you know, if any other promotion had done a match with this many stops, they'd probably get called out on it. But I thought they kind of worked this time. I don't want to see it all the time, but I think it worked here. And I thought that one of the things that no one's really saying, and I think, you know, someone needs to give Roman Reigns credit for something other than wearing the world's worst pair of jeans, is that he did sell a lot for AJ. Like, he really looked beat up. Like, if you watch it, I mean, I don't want to suggest you watch it back because you might get more rage, but like, he really does. He does sell a lot. You know, he really makes it look like AJ's giving him a beating. And if the story is that AJ is, you know, the technical wrestler extraordinaire who can wrestle this guy down, but Reigns is incredibly resilient and has, you know, he doesn't have the moves of AJ Styles, but the moves he does have are backed up by his immense and superior power, because as characters, it would make sense for Roman Reigns to be a stronger, more powerful guy than AJ Styles. And then the stuff they did on Raw, you know, this idea that Roman Reigns is, you know, he's a fair guy. He's not a bad guy. He's not a good guy. He's a fair guy. But, you know, he, and one of his best moments, I think, when he saw AJ attack the Usos with the chair, his facial stuff was pretty decent. And he was like, and it unleashed the river of rage. And that's why he went so crazy on him. And just in general, I thought AJ looked great in the main event, although he did lose eventually.
Yeah, he busted out almost all of his finishers and couldn't finish him.
He did it twice before he lost.
I loved the way that Roman sold for all three guys in a 3-on-1 handicap match. That was pretty good. And then, you know, I mean,
He didn't hit him with a Styles Clash, though.
Yeah. That was the only one. He kicked out of that phenomenal forearm a couple of times, including that fantastic one onto the table. I mean, AJ put him through a table. And then to finish it all off, the big exclamation point, that one spear. Man, oh man, what a spear, right, guys?
I'll give you that.
AJ gave him literally numerous finishing maneuvers, and his buddies came in from Japan, and they did their finishing maneuver, which has devastated everyone that they've done it on thus far. I mean, you know, oh man, oh man. So, I mean, you know, they triple teamed him. They pulled off all those different finishing maneuvers over and over and over again, and it still wasn't enough to beat one spear.
I will say that when the match ended, I did turn to Kenny right away and say, I really wish Roman hadn't won with just one spear. That's the only thing.
Yeah, it took one finishing maneuver from Roman to beat off. to beat off AJ Styles, and as opposed to AJ having to whip out literally everything but one finishing maneuver from his arsenal,
including numerous times,
and bringing in the Bullet Club all the way from Japan to hit their finishing maneuvers on him in succession of that. Wow, Roman Reigns must be a character to be able to kick out of literally all of New Japan's finishing maneuvers.
I'll be honest.
I think the way it played off, though, like, they did a lot of that on the outside, and there was some stuff that happened in between. The Usos did interfere also.
They hit the finisher.
As well. He also dove onto them. Right. What a great cousin.
Oh, they're a terrible family. I think we know that by now.
Damn savages. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry, I'm just channeling my inner Paul Heyman.
Yeah, I was going to say. But it wasn't like, you know, he hit the finisher and he just kicked out. So I think there were more shenanigans around it. I mean, this was a bells and whistles match.
And then he kicked out.
AJ did win twice. Like, he won two matches.
I'll be honest. The reason I think I'm quite defensive over this match is because I genuinely loved watching this. Because, you know, that people say, you know, if you're watching a movie and you notice all the camera tricks or the CG or you know, then it's not really sucking you in. I was sucked in by this story. And yeah, after it, I'm like, oh yeah, the interferences, that was a bit WCW and the restart. And I mean, it was a bit TNA when Bischoff did it there as well with that horrible time limit thing they did.
So here's the thing with the restart. Shane McMahon comes out and goes, no, that might have happened in the old era where championship matches ended in a count out, but that's not happening here. Name one time in the past. Sandra, you're the perfect person here. Name one time in the WWE where a championship match on a pay-per-view ended in a count out.
On a pay-per-view?
Come on, Sandra.
I know.
It probably hasn't happened, though.
I can't think of anything on a pay-per-view.
But isn't it? I think the difference is that this is one of these things where I think if you are now,
isn't it good that it hasn't happened and that they don't do it very often? But doesn't that make it a little more effective now?
But that was Shane's point, though. He came out and he goes, "This may have happened all the time in the old era, but now that I'm running the company, championship matches will never end in a countout." I know you're so sick of seeing that, right? And I'm like, I can't even remember one time that's happened in the past.
I think maybe it's just that I'm ignoring everything Shane McMahon says now so I can keep cheering him.
I think there's two, right. This is the perspective I have on it. Like, as I said, I was really, really into the match. And I think that you've already said that the pay-per-view kicked off for you with a very, David, this is, you know, it started off negative. You were slipping down a slope of, you know,
it started negative, but Kevin Owens and his Variety Hour picked it up. Immediately, like, by the end of that, I had momentarily forgotten that Enzo got hurt. And then once it was over, I was like, oh yeah, Enzo got hurt, though.
But I think that with the match, like, yeah, afterwards, I can see your point, but I think that when I was in the moment watching it, yeah, like, I know, when I think about it, that when Shane comes out and restarts it, like, nobody's ever had a count out win for a title match on a pay-per-view, but, like, because I was really into the match and just into the story, like, I wanted to see it continue. I didn't care what Shane came out and said, really. I just cared that he was restarting the match. And, you know, they got me, because there were two times where I really thought AJ was going to win, and I've enjoyed him in WWE. But I think I said in the other podcast, I forgot how much I like him and how good he is. And because, you know, I spent a couple of years just not following him because he was, you know, in Florida. But I just didn't really care. And after the fact, it's kind of like when you see, like I said, you see a film and you just really enjoy the experience of it. You're into it. And then afterwards, you're kind of like, oh, well, that scene wouldn't really work. Maybe the CGI was a bit ropey there. But I can't really ignore the gut reaction, which was, I really liked it. I bet for the near falls. I really thought AJ was going to win at 2 points. And I was like, ah, like jumping out of my seat. And ultimately, all the bells and whistles and the window dressing in the moment worked for me. And I can't say you're wrong with the comparisons to other companies or the sort of the criticisms of what Shane said or what Stephanie would say or the kind of, you know, the hokiness of it. Or, I mean, when Shane came out, I said to Kenny, I went, there's going to be another false finish and she's going to come out and make
right.
it no DQ.
I said the same thing to the guys I was watching with.
I was looking forward to it because I was so anticipating what was going to happen. When she did, I was like, yes, I got it. I called this twist. And I was like, I just really liked it. And I can't say that you're wrong. Like, it just comes down to where you, I think maybe it's like where you sucked into it enough to forgive it, that stuff, and enjoy what they were presenting, or was it just too glaring? You know, the cracks and the joins were too obvious to look past, and maybe where the impasse comes from. I don't know.
Let me preface all of this, and I think this will offer some perspective, and I think people will understand where I'm coming from a little bit more. First and foremost, I'm not a huge AJ Styles fan. So this isn't coming from a bitter fan perspective. This is just the honest truth, and it's going to be unpopular with some people. And it may seem a little bit bigoted. Whenever I hear someone is a super hardcore religious Christian person, that always rubs me the wrong way. Like, automatically I go, yeah, I can't really, you know, that's something I have a hard time getting over it. I just do. It's like whenever you find out somebody disagrees with your politics, you're kind of rubbed the wrong way by it. You're like, oh, that's sad. Like literally, that's my reaction, right? So with AJ Styles, he's absolutely phenomenal in the ring. But outside of the ring, I'm like, okay, I'm happy for him that he has that thing. But it doesn't necessarily make me want to root for him now. You know, it's one of those deals. As it were, like Sami Zayn, that guy, I'm like, oh, I want to be friends with him, right? Like, you know, he's a guy I could call up at 2 a.m. and talk about music with, you know, one of those things, right? So right off the bat, I'm not an AJ fanboy. I'm not clamoring for him to hold the title even. I knew what this is going into it, which is part of me being a genius that predicts things. That's just the way it goes whenever you're this smart, guys. I'm sorry. But I knew going in there wasn't a chance in hell that he was getting the title. So I wanted him to look strong. Automatically, that's my intent for the match. He's not going to win, but I want him to come out of it looking good. All right. So we go into the match, and automatically, another thing I need to preface before we get too far. Anytime I am subjected to a bunch of non-finishes and hodgepodges and run-ins and disqualifications and stuff that basically put WCW out of business in 2001. That type of stuff to where I expected Judy Bagwell to come out and start counting for the third hodgepodge finish of this match once the ref got knocked down or something, right? Like that's what I was expecting at that point. I'm like, oh boy, the clown car is unloading, folks. Get back. You don't want to get trampled over by all the elephants that are climbing out of it. So automatically that puts a bad taste in my mouth. And I was already subjected to three non-finishes before this. Again, the end zone cast thing is absolutely horrible. And the finish to that match is secondary to every single thing that happened to Enzo, where he went, he got injured, had to go to the hospital, the whole nine yards. Hey, that is absolutely terrible. That plays second fiddle to the real life implications of what happened during that match. But it happened. It happened. So that's something that we had to live with. Then you had and that had championship implications too, by the way. There wasn't a tag team championship match. That was the closest thing we had to it. And let me mention, if that match had concluded the way it was scheduled to, what would have happened? The Dudley boys would have came down.
It was scheduled for it was scheduled to have
an interference. So you know what? Scrap everything. Now that I just thought of that, that was scheduled for an interference. So if Enzo hadn't got hurt, A, would have been an interference. Then you had the Intercontinental Championship match. Interference. Well, yeah, not a clean finish. That's what we can call it, right? There was interference from the outside. So there you go. The two closest things to a championship match, interference. Then from there on, we go on to the Women's Championship match. Interference. And plus, you're laughing in the face of my all-time favorite wrestler by bringing up one of the worst experiences of his entire professional life, maybe even one of the worst experiences of his actual life. All right, so you have three clown car finishes, and I'm thinking this entire time, man, something bad's going to happen here, but I just hope it's a clean finish. So that's my mentality going in. What do we get? What do we get? What do we get? We get not one, not two, but three clown car finishes in one match. Oh! Talk about a gutter.
The
now,
decisive
pin
is not clown car, is it, though? Like, I mean, other than the fact that it took one spear, that's not a good finish.
There were two false finishes. Like, and I'm not talking false one, two, he kicked out. Not those false finishes. I'm talking the match ended and restarted. There were two of those before we actually got a real finish, which involved everyone coming out and interfering.
It was a lot of bells and whistles.
That's a whole lot of bells and whistles.
It's a lot of bells and whistles. I don't see necessarily where that's always a bad thing, because I kind of feel like the non-finishes, the women's match excluded, that was stupid. But
four times
the other
non.
Well, yeah, but it advanced the stories that they wanted to advance, and I think they did it in a way that worked for me anyway. Like, I think they were all very different types of interference. They were, you know, different types of matches. And it wasn't all non-finishes. Like, the matches ended just via shenanigans.
Yeah.
And I kind of,
that is
maybe I just have more.
By the very definition of it.
No, it's not. The match ended and there was a winner. That's not a non-finish.
Sandra. What in your... A non-finish, by like the very definition, is where there is some type of interference of some kind, and it plays an impact on the actual end result. At least to me, and I know I'm not alone here. I know I'm not.
I define a non-finish as like Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar. Where there was no winner announced.
Yeah. Or, like, a count out or a double DQ or something.
If someone
gets
their hands raised, it could be, like, a dusty finish or a shenanigan-y finish. I don't know if it's a non-finish. But I get the spirit of it. You thought there were two men.
Right now we're arguing over
finishes.
Semantics. So
yeah, which is not the point.
That's not the point.
Like, for me as a show, it worked. And I don't think that it was... I kind of felt like the shenanigans and things, they served a purpose, like I said, with the exclusion of the women's match, because that was stupid. But the shenanigans in the Intercontinental match actually helped to further something so well, right? Like, I think, from what I understand, and again, I didn't watch it, but didn't WCW just have all bullshit finishes because Hulk Hogan? like, a lot of the time, or, like, main event stuff.
A lot
stuff.
Of what happened at Payback happened in WCW Kevin Nash booking era.
But
In fact, I tweeted
did it serve a purpose ever, or was it just, like...
It got him through to the next day, that way they could collect more paychecks. But, okay. like...
Because, like, this, to me, it all felt like it had consequence, and it all felt like it had a place where it was going, and I enjoyed it. So, part of it is that I enjoyed it. But I don't know. I liked the non clean finish of the Intercontinental title match because it made Antonio Cesaro look so badass and it made The Miz look so heelish and so cowardly and so snivelly. And oh, I just hate him and I love hating him so much.
Of the ones that were scheduled, I think that was the best non finish. And
it brought Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn into the story so well, too. And now we get this fatal four way situation that I love.
As to where with this main event, though, like, the wrestling was great. Let me go ahead and say that. AJ and Roman tore it down. I think that Roman gets way too much shit. I think that he is perfectly adequate in the ring. And sometimes he gets it. I honestly believe that. And that's going to get me a lot of heat, too. But he gets it. I think that he has the good instincts for the ring. His facial expressions are getting better. His timing's getting better. You don't got to be perfect in wrestling. We were just talking about that earlier. It's a carnival, and I think that he fills his role very well. I think he would fill it better with a different alignment. I think him coming out as a heel would work a lot better, obviously. But, you know, I mean, so many matches. He was in the best match of the card last year on the pay-per-views. He is perfectly adequate. AJ brought out the best in him. But I don't see where you go from here with AJ Styles. AJ Styles brought everything out into the middle of the ring, including his buddies from Japan. And they hit their finishers, all but one for AJ. But, I mean, Jericho kicked out of the one that he didn't hit. Where was it? WrestleMania that he kicked out of it? Or SmackDown? I forget which one it was that he actually hit the Styles Clash. But Jericho kicked out of it. So... automatically, it's like, okay, well, if Jericho could kick out of it, I think Roman Reigns could kick out of it. So, to me, I just don't see where you go from here. If that were the end of the AJ feud, I'd be okay with it, I think. But now we gotta go through this again. And he's not winning.
I think there's enough around it. Like, there's still the intrigue of the Bullet Club. There's still kind of, I don't know. I'm still kind of into it. I don't know where they go, but I'm also not writing the story. And they've actually been telling a decent story on Raw lately, so I've been kind of excited about that. Like, maybe I'm just putting a little too much faith in them at this point because I have been enjoying the television, but I'm still interested to see where it goes. I don't know where it goes, but that's not really my job.
Right, right. For me, I opened the book by accident and I saw the last chapter. And I know where the story's headed, and I don't like the conclusion. So it's like, well, why should I really care? You know? It's not like he's going to get up, dust himself off from being put through a table on Raw, and from being laid out after having all of his finishes kicked out of numerous times, except for that Styles Clash that he couldn't pin Jericho with. And so it's like, okay, but if he's going to get up and dust himself off and get the win against Roman, hey, I love this. I do. But I've already seen the ending, and the ending isn't good for AJ Styles. So I'm not a fan.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I guess I don't think he has to win the feud to necessarily come out of it looking good. I'm more with Robert. I think it worked for me, and I think AJ did come out of it looking great. Like,
this is my first AJ Styles experience,
and I'm excited, but...
It's the Stephanie McMahon thing. It's the Stephanie McMahon thing. She can never have anybody get comeuppance on her. And that's the way this is. It's AJ can't get his comeuppance. So I just don't see where this goes from here to where it could be interesting.
Well, like the end of Empire Strikes Back, since it's Star Wars Day, we're going to have to end a roundtable on a note of discord and disharmony in the pay-per-view roundtable universe, because we are running out of time here. But I guess I'll give everybody the chance to give some final thoughts. I feel like David can't be the only one that gets to make outrageous claims on it. So I'm going to make two before I go. The first one is something I've only just realized right now. Character work aside, I can't believe I'm about to say this, and I think people are going to hate me for it more so than what you said, David, but I actually would put next to one another, well, probably always at the moment, be more interested in seeing Roman Reigns wrestle than Dean Ambrose. I feel like I've historically given Roman more shit, but when it comes down to it, I've been invested in several Roman Reigns matches on pay-per-view, and I can't remember the last time I was particularly invested in an Ambrose one, which I can't really believe. But also, second hyperbolic thing to finish off, really, is that I really enjoyed the pay-per-view. I'd probably give it a 7 or a 7.5 out of 10. You don't have to give it out of 10, I'm just contextualizing it. And also, I genuinely was entertained, and think that the AJ and Roman match was superior to anything they did last month in Dallas for WrestleMania. I would take that match. I would rewatch. In fact, I have not rewatched any of WrestleMania, I don't think. But I'd rewatch that main event again. That's how into it and how enjoyable the experience of watching it was that I had, which is not the same, and everybody's opinions are different, but in terms of where does it go from here, I'd be quite happy to see these guys wrestle again, even if AJ Styles is never going to win, because I enjoyed it that much. So I guess I'll be there for Extreme Rules, but Sandra, to you for final thoughts.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed the pay-per-view. It underwhelmed me in some aspects, like the McMahon promo, the finish to the women's match. I really didn't love those. Obviously, I didn't like seeing Enzo get injured. It was a pay-per-view that I was really looking forward to a lot, to the point where I was very, very close to buying a ticket and going. I did not end up doing that. And there was nothing on the show that made me really regret not going, not making the 3-hour drive to Chicago. But I really enjoyed it, and there are a lot of things coming out of it. And I think for me, I don't know where a lot of this goes. Like, some of it, obviously, like the Intercontinental title scene is awesome. And, you know, we didn't even mention on Raw, did we mention Alexander Rusev is now the number one contender for Kalisto? Because I'm really, really excited about that. And I know that Ryback and Kalisto was kind of, you know, pre-show, and I didn't even see it yet. I do plan to watch the match, but I've wanted Alexander Rusev versus Kalisto forever. And I'm sure I've probably said it on the show before. If not, I know I've said it to lots of people. It's been a dream match of mine for some reason. And now I'm going to get to see it. So I'm really excited about that. And I kind of like that I don't know exactly where things are going with the main event scene, because I am still interested in it. And I think the whole Bullet Club, like, potential demon showing up at some point to do something, and I don't even know what. Like, I don't have any predictions for how or why or what will happen. But I think I like the uncertainty, and I think that's what's actually keeping me interested in it right now. So I kind of like not knowing, and they're sort of telling some good stories. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. I'm enjoying the main roster a lot right now, and that's not something I would have said a month ago, certainly not after WrestleMania.
And over to you, David, for some final thoughts.
I think your level of enjoyment for this pay-per-view, I think, honestly, the only thing that separates you and I, Robert, and you and I, Sandra, is if you can tolerate a clown car finish. And I can't, let alone 4 on one pay-per-view. So I think that's literally the only thing that separates it. I didn't like the way that AJ was handled during this whole thing. I think if you would have cut out a couple of the false finishes where he hits his finishers and doesn't get the win, that this would have been absolutely adequate for me, even with the interference from the Bullet Club. But because that happened, you know, I mean, hey, facts are facts. Things happened, and I wasn't pleased with them. So I'm going to hearken back to the days of yore with my good buddy Bret Hart. I'm going to give this one a 4 out of 10. And if I may end this on a somber note, today is the 2nd anniversary of my mother's death. She was a wonderful lady. She would go out. I always remember this story where we were sitting in a White Castle drive-thru. White Castle is a fast food chain here in the States. And there was a homeless guy, and it was pouring down snow. I think we got 2 feet of snow. And there was a homeless man without shoes on, shivering over by the dumpster. And my mom said, watch this. And she rolled down the window. She called him over. He got into our car, our brand new car at the time. He smelled terrible. She took him through the drive-thru. She got him more food than he had had in a week. She took him down the street to Payless Shoes. And she got him a brand new pair of snow boots for him to wear. And she dropped him back off with a bunch of blankets that she had in the back seat in case she ever got stranded in the snow. And she left him there with brand new shoes and a full belly full of White Castle hamburgers and something to cover up with. And she told me at that time, I guess I was about 8 years old, she said, that's what you do to people who need you. You don't ignore them and you don't look away. You look directly at them, you look them in the eye, and you offer your hand. And that stuck with me to this day. She was a wonderful lady. So all I can say is if you still have your parents, please call them today. Let them know that you love them. Find out about the things that they worried about whenever you were too young to worry. Find out what they were like before they had you. Get to know your parents as people because they won't always be there. And not everybody's parents are famous, so you won't be able to read a biography about your parents. That's on you. You have to figure that out. So call your parents and ask any questions that you may have. Just anything. It doesn't matter if it's inconsequential or if it truly matters to you. Learn as much about your parents as you can while you still have them and cherish them every day. Do something nice for somebody today and definitely call your folks to let them know that you're thinking of them today. Thank you.
And that was, well, if you listen very closely, you can hear the collective sound of hundreds, maybe even thousands of people putting down their phone and saying, well, after that story, I really can't fucking tweet him and say he's talking shite about the wrestling, can I, really? David, that was lovely.
Well played.
I love it. That's the ultimate McCutcheon move. He trashes your favorite pay-per-view and then shows you he's just an absolutely wonderful human, as by the sounds of it.
I wasn't born that way. I was taught that by my mother.
No, that's a really lovely story, David. And
thank you.
I absolutely back up your statement. I'm lucky enough to still have both my mom and dad, but I'll go have a chat with them before I go.
Yeah,
to kids.
Ask them anything. That's the worst thing is being awake at 3 a.m. because she was always awake at 3 a.m. and just calling her and being all like, "Hey, you know." What did you like to do? What was your favorite movies back before I was born? What music did you listen to? Just any little thing, just little stories that she has about her friends, little things, places that she used to eat at that are no longer open because they went out of business. Just little things like that, just little pieces of history that you might not know about. Give your folks a call and think of something fun to ask them that will make them laugh, that will make them think back to their days whenever they were your age that you are now. Stuff like that. And it'll do you good. It'll do them good. And by proxy, the world good. If you're feeling good, then you're not going to go out and be a dick to anybody. So,
see, usually at the end of a podcast, I feel like I'm on the verge of tears because Kenny's opinions are just so awful. But it's but now this...
I do apologize for calling you Kenny. Robert, I love you. Never do that again.
Now you're going to have to tell me some more stories before I forgive you for that. So, that's all from us, and we hope you enjoyed listening to this pay-per-view roundtable covering Payback and Raw from me, from Sandra, from David. Thank you very much for listening. Bastard, you wrap it all up by coming out looking like the greatest guy ever.
Seriously. I have a dead mom too.